Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is, of course, our weekly chance to get together and have a bit of a chat and explore what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. And we always love to hear from you. So if you've got any thoughts, any comments, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be exploring some of the digital and optical magnifiers available from the RNIB shop. I'll be having a play with that new Be My Eyes app on Windows, and we'll be hearing some more from the recent Sight City conference in Frankfurt. Joining me this week, as always, regular co-host Hubert Pavalkovic. How's it going?
Yes, it's going good. It's going good. So I've recently been seeing, it's a short bit of news from me, AppleVis have inducted two more apps into their annual Hall of Fame that they have, which basically, I like it because it points out apps that are not only accessible, but also continuously accessible and maintain accessibility throughout and are actively, well, under active development. The one of the latest additions, Callum, you'll be happy with, is Voice Vista. That app has been inducted into the AppleVis Hall of Fame, which is good to see. It's clearly a great navigation app. And another one is a client for Mastodon, which is an interesting one because Mastodon is the one social network I've never actually really used.
I keep sort of dipping in and out of Mastodon, to be honest. Is it Mona, the one that's not, but I've not seen
it? Yes, that's the one.
I thought when I saw the nominations for the Hall of Fame, to be honest, that it was, for me, it was a close one between those two because you can only submit one nomination per person. And I mean, I did go for Voice Vista in the end. It's just taken what we had with Soundscape and just brought it to a whole new level, if you ask me. And it's just one, well, like many of these apps, I think Mona is similar, but it's just one person working on this. There's not a huge organization with thousands of employees working on this. It's just one person, usually in their spare time as well, working on this and taking accessibility so seriously as well. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I think it's turned this app into something which, into a navigation app, which a lot of blind and partially sighted people were looking for. And I think for me, that is quite the key with that. I'm not really surprised about why it was in the end inducted. It is a really good navigation app, and I think it's got potential for a lot more.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it's one of them things, isn't it? I've just been saying about how it's one person working on this. Yeah, I'm now going to make this next comment. We always want more, you know. Because, yeah, you're right, it is the navigation app. Because normally I would be using a bit of a mixture of like Soundscape, but also Google Maps for the turn-by-turn, or even similar with Blind Square, I'd use Blind Square, but then have something else running, Google Maps or Apple Maps, and you've got all these things talking at you, whereas this just ties it into one. I'd love now if it got public transport integration, you know, so it could kind of tell you, as well as your turn-by-turn walking directions, it could give you the sort of directions you get from Move It, you know, where it will tell you which stop you're at and when to get off the bus or the train or whatever. But you're asking quite a lot there. I know they've built this on, the developers built this on Apple Maps. I don't know if that sort of thing is available for third parties on there, but
there's nothing wrong with wanting more. I think, you know, you always want to see progress in technology. And I think, you know, Voice Vista is great at the moment and it's fantastic for what it is and it should always be praised for it. But there's nothing wrong with saying, well, now we've reached this stage, you know, how about we progress further? And okay, public transport integration could start off small with maybe out without notifications just yet, but even a slight integration of it could only then progress further. So it's doing it in small steps and being realistic. I think there's nothing wrong with wanting more as long as you're realistic about it.
Something else that I spotted this week, and it's kind of funny, we haven't planned it this way, but obviously we're going to be getting into Be My Eyes a bit later and how you can access Be My AI on Windows. But on a similar kind of note, there's been an update to JAWS recently. And remember we were talking about the Picture Smart a couple of months ago where they've added AI descriptions. You can now follow up with that, so you can ask it questions. So apparently if you go into the pictures, if you do a normal Picture Smart scan, get your description. But then if you're on the latest version, there's a link at the bottom of your results. I think it says like ask follow-up questions or something. So you click on that, and then well, it's kind of similar to Be My Eyes, I guess. You're into a little text box, you ask a question, and it will give you a response. So that's built into JAWS now.
Yeah, I think it's good to have that. And I think in general, most of these kind of image recognition features these days really need to have follow-up questions because, you know, everywhere has that. It's kind of everyone trying to keep up with everyone else when it comes to image recognition. The next best thing is to be able to ask follow-up questions. Everyone has to have that really. So it's good to see that happening all across so that every single choice out there has the same functions. That way, you know, whatever people want to use, they won't really miss out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's tools in the toolbox, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, being able to have the choice. And I always think, as I always say, choice is important because everyone wants different things and everyone uses different apps. But it's good to see that in most cases, everyone has pretty much the same functions available to them, no matter what they choose to use.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, stick with us. It's another Tech Talk.
We often talk about solutions for those of us who are totally blind, but what if you are partially sighted? If you want to make best use of your remaining vision, well, there are a wide range of optical and digital magnification products available, and we've got some new ones. And here to help us navigate this world is Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life store. Welcome back to Connect Radio, Louise. Just before we talk about your new products, can you just explain for listeners some of the pros and cons of kind of optical versus electronic magnifiers? Because there's a lot of options out there for people. And if you're new to this world, it can be potentially confusing.
It can. I think one of the biggest pro for an optical magnifier would be the simplicity. It has just a large switch, you know, for turning the magnifier on and off to eliminate the handheld magnifier.
A light.
Yep, exactly. And then with the electronic magnifier, some of them might have quite a few buttons around them, so it can be a bit confusing at the start to know how to operate the electronic magnifier. And if you're new to sight loss, that might be a bit daunting.
And presumably, even if your batteries have died, with an optical magnifier, you know, you might already have sufficient light. You can still use it. Whereas an electronic magnifier, if the battery's died, then it's kind of game over until you recharge it, right?
Yeah, it is, until you recharge it, correct. And also with the optical magnifier, they're designed so that you can easily replace the batteries. You don't need a screw to open the back of it either.
Right, and these are usually off-the-shelf batteries, the kind of batteries that you would...
Yes, your standard AA or AAA, but with the ones that we're going to talk about today, they take an LR14 battery. It's a C battery, so it's the round one.
Right, okay. Well, we'll get into that. I mean, are there any other pros and cons depending on your level of sight or anything like
that? I suppose with the optical ones, if you're, for example, last minute you decide that you want to nip out and you're going to get a train, you can take the optical one with you. You won't have to worry about making sure that it's fully charged before you go.
Right. And are there particular eye conditions that would benefit from, you know, one or other of these categories?
Not really, no. It just depend on the own person's individual needs.
Right, because I remember you saying to me once that for people needing quite a lot of magnification, maybe a digital or electronic magnifier might be the way to go.
That's correct. So from in our store experiences, we tend to find that anyone who requires a magnification higher than a 5, we would start to look at the electronic magnifiers.
So when you say 5, that's like 5 times.
5 times.
Yeah, 5 times the original size of the print.
Yeah.
And what sorts of things, Louise, I mean, are people just using magnifiers for reading or do you find other use cases as well?
A lot of people will find that you tend to find will want to use it to read their post, or they may still want to be able to read their favourite magazines or newspapers, just to read, for example, the newspaper, the sports article, or, you know, just interest or hobbies to be able to still do.
Right, but is it just reading, or do you find that customers have other use cases as well?
Just for reading.
Right, so not looking at, I don't know, photographs or knitting or, I don't know.
It's not, I haven't heard of anyone using it for photographs, but then I suppose that, you know, I don't know what everyone else is doing behind the closed doors. They might be using them to look through photographs, could be.
All right. Okay, so you have got some new optical magnifiers in your range. Tell us about those.
So the ones we're going to speak today about are the Eschenbach System Vario Plus. That's a little bit of a mouthful.
I'm just going to call it the Vario Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what's special about the Vario Plus?
These are unique in the way that they're designed. So if you initially get an optical magnifier at the times 4 and then a couple of years down the line, your sight has slightly deteriorated and you may not necessarily want to look at an electronic magnifier, you can simply replace the head on the original magnifier that you initially purchased.
Right. Okay. So just to explain, when you say the head, that's the kind of the glass part at the...
That's the lens. So there's two parts. So we have the illuminated handle and then you attach the lens onto the handle.
Right. So the handle's a bit like a torch with a kind of a light bulb in the end. You put batteries inside that.
It is. It's got an LED light and that's the compartment where it holds the batteries as well. And then the head, that's the magnifier. That you just push it on.
Right, so the actual magnifying glass kind of sits at right angles to the light, so then you can hold your magnifier over the words that you want to read, and that area will be illuminated.
Yes, and now there's different strengths available, so that you can purchase these in a 4x, 5, 7, 10, and a 12.5. The 4 and the 5 have a reading line as well, so that can help with if you want to be able to read a little bit quicker, and with increasing the speed of how you move across the page, it will keep you in place of where you are.
Okay, and who are these for? Who are these magnifiers aimed at, do you think, Louise?
I would say for someone who's new to sight loss, and for people who aren't necessarily wanting a higher end electronic magnifier.
Okay. And you've got a user replaceable battery in there as well.
Yes, so they're standard batteries. As I said, they're not rechargeable. You just replace once the battery's done, you can just replace them. And they also come with two color filters as well, with an orange and a yellow. And they simply click on to the LED light, so you can change the color temperature, and that can be either orange or yellow.
Right, and do you get a battery with it?
Oh no, it's just a click on. You don't need batteries for that.
No, for the light, the battery to power the light in the magnifier, is the battery supplied with it?
Yeah, no, the battery's not supplied with the magnifiers.
So you have to buy your own battery.
You have to purchase a battery, yeah.
Right. Okay. So you might want to factor that in. And then, is there any kind of protective cover or case or anything like that?
There is a case to cover the lens at the top. Yes.
All right. And so how many are in the range?
So we have the times 4, 5, 7, 10, and 12.5.
Right. So 5 different magnification levels, user replaceable battery, a little cover to go over there, a little color filter, reading lines on those
on the
4 and the 5. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right. Well, unless you've got anything else you want to share, just let everyone know where they can find out more.
For more information on our magnification range, you can visit our website at shop.rnib.org.uk, or you can phone the helpline on 0303 123 9999.
Brilliant. Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life store, thanks so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
If you were listening last week, you might have heard me talking briefly about the new Be My Eyes app on Windows. And this was basically breaking news at the time of the recording that had only just been announced. And all I really knew at that point was that Be My Eyes was on Windows. And for obvious reasons, it was very exciting. Now, I finally had the chance to have a play with it and really, really liking it. It's exactly what you'd expect from Be My Eyes. So to get hold of this, this is available if you're on Windows 10 or Windows 11. So all you have to do is go into the Microsoft Store. So just press the Windows key, type in Store on your start menu and it should come up. Once you're on there, just do a search for Be My Eyes and you'll find it there. It's a free app. Just click the install button and give it a couple of seconds and then that's it. You will have Be My Eyes. When you first launch the app for the first time, it'll ask you to sign in or create an account. So if you already use Be My Eyes on your phone, then you can sign in to that same account. If you've not already got a Be My Eyes account, it's really simple to create one. I think all it asks for is an email address, a password. It will send you a link to verify the email address, and then that's it. You're good to go. Now, although we're calling this Be My Eyes, I mean, it is Be My Eyes, but this isn't full-fledged Be My Eyes. So what I mean by that is you can't make calls to volunteers. You can't go through the specialised help options. So, you know, for example, getting in touch with Microsoft's Disability Answer Desk or any of the other services that are on there. This is more of a Be My AI client, is probably a more accurate way to put it. So let's open up the app and see what we've got. So I'm going to press the Windows key on my keyboard.
Start window, search box.
And we've got the search box. So I'm just going to start typing in Be My Eyes. Usually it comes up as soon as I type the word B.
Suggestions available. Be My Eyes app, press right to switch.
There it is. Press enter.
Be My Eyes window. Be My Eyes window. Be My AI tab item. Describe my screen. Shortcut Control plus Alt plus H button.
And then we've got four options in here. So we've got describe my screen. And these have all got keyboard shortcuts, as you'll hear. So describe my screen. If I press tab.
Take picture using built-in camera. Shortcut Control plus Alt plus J button.
Pretty self-explanatory. Take picture using the built-in camera. So that just takes a picture of whatever your computer's webcam is seeing.
Describe picture from File Explorer. Shortcut Control plus Alt plus K button.
This one allows you to upload an image from the File Explorer. So if you've got an image stored on your computer, maybe on your desktop or in your pictures folder, you can browse the files. So this will just bring up the Windows, the standard Windows, you know, browse for file dialog box and allow you to pick a file and then you can describe the image from there.
Describe clipboard. Shortcut Control plus Alt plus L button.
And then this one's really interesting. Describe clipboard. So what this means is if you've got an image that you've copied to your clipboard, so maybe an image on a web page or an image on an email, and you've done Control C and just copied that image, it will then take that and describe it. You can also copy a URL to an image as well. So if you've got a link somewhere to an image and you don't know what it is, then rather than having to download the image itself or open the image and copy it, you could just grab the URL and try clicking this describe from clipboard and seeing what it does. So let's have a play with some of this. So I'm going to go back to the first option. In fact, I'm going to use the keyboard shortcut just to make it easier. And this keyboard shortcut can be run from anywhere. So you don't necessarily have to have the app in focus. You could be doing something on a web page or in another app. And if you decide that you won't be my eyes to describe the screen or take a picture, you can just press these shortcuts as long as the app is open and running. The only thing you've got to bear in mind is that it might clash with other applications. So if it doesn't work, then Alt-Tab over to Be My Eyes, and then you can either do the shortcut or press the button from there. So the shortcut for describe screen is Control-Alt-H. So I'm just going to do that now. Oh, and bear in mind as well, if you're using a screen reader that has a screen curtain, so the screen curtain in NVDA or the screen shade in JAWS, you need to make sure that that's turned off. Otherwise, it will just describe a blank screen. So with that in mind, if I do Control-H.
Be My AI tab item, one of two level. Please wait, Be My AI is writing a message. Question to ask the AI, edit.
So it's typing a message and it's also put us in a message box. So I'll give that a second.
The image shows a computer desktop with the Reaper audio editing software open. The Reaper window is in the foreground, displaying a project title Windows demo with two tracks labeled Cal Voice and Narrator. The tracks show waveforms indicating recorded audio. The software is currently in recording mode, as indicated by the red recording button being active. On the left side of the screen, there are several desktop icons, including Recycle Bin and VDA, Microsoft Edge, Zoom Workplace, Reaper, X64 FS Reader 3.0. The background wallpaper features a person in a Red Bull outfit, possibly skydiving or engaged in an extreme sport, with a blue sky and clouds in the background.
Wow. Okay, I don't know what that screensaver is. That's just a Windows default. I don't think I've ever gone in and changed my my screensaver, but someone's skydiving, apparently. Okay, interesting. That's just basically taken a screenshot of my entire screen and described it. So Reaper is what I'm using to record this this demo. And obviously it picked up on all the icons on my desktop as well. And as you heard there, questions to ask the AI, and we were in an edit field, so we can ask questions to this. So I'm just going to do...
Are there any errors in the Reaper app?
Are there any errors in the Reaper app? Now, I hope there aren't, because that'll mean that it isn't recording. But that's something you might want to ask. You know, are there any error messages? Are there any pop-ups? So I'm just going to press enter.
Please wait. Be My AI is writing a message. Message sent.
That's sent.
There are no visible error messages in the Reaper application window. The software appears to be functioning normally, with the recording in progress and no alerts or warnings displayed. If you need further assistance or suspect there might be an issue not visible in the screenshot, you might want to press the Call a Volunteer button for guidance.
Ah, now I've not seen that before. So it does seem to come up with those prompts that you normally get on iOS. Like, if you need assistance, press the Call a Volunteer button. Obviously, there isn't one on here. So that's interesting. That's the first time it's done that, actually. But yeah, just to be very clear, you can't call volunteers on this. But it did answer the question and tell me that there's no errors showing in Reaper, which is good to know. So that means that I'm not just sat here talking to myself. let's try a couple of others. I'm going to try the built-in camera option. And I feel like this could be really useful for video calls. You know, so I could use this this option to check my camera before I go on a video call, get a description of where I am in the frame, possibly, and also get a description of a background and just make sure that that's okay and the lighting is okay and stuff. So let's see how that goes. So I'm just going to press tab to until we find a back button to get out of this.
Back button.
There it is. So click back.
Describe my screen. Shortcut Control plus Alt plus H button.
Now I'm going to tab over to the take picture using built-in camera button. We could just use the shortcut Control Alt J, but I'm going to tab to the option.
Take picture using built-in camera. Shortcut Control plus Alt plus J button.
Press enter.
Take picture button.
Now it's given us the chance to sort of get ready and get prepared, get ourselves in the frame, and then there's a second take picture button. So I'm going to turn to sort of face my camera, and then I'll press enter.
Back button. Question to ask the AI. Edit. Please wait. Be My AI is writing a message. The picture shows a young man with short, light brown hair wearing a dark gray t-shirt. He has large black headphones on his head. The background is a plain, light-colored wall with a small portion of a poster visible on the left side. The man is looking slightly to the left of the camera.
Okay, interesting. So it told me about the background. Also let me know that I'm looking slightly to the left of the camera. And something that's a bit of an interesting use for this, at least for me, is that I've got one of those little switches on next to my laptop camera that puts down a little shutter in front of the camera, which I normally have it closed, so you can't feel it. Well, obviously, you can feel the direction that the switch is pointing, but you can't feel the little cover that it puts over. Now, I normally have the camera covered up. I'm not one of these people who, you know, thinks everyone's watching me, but I kind of feel like if my camera was to come on by accident, then I'd rather them see nothing than see, you know, me not realizing that I'm on camera. So because I barely use that switch, I always forget which direction's which. So that's another time that I use this to tell me whether the camera is open or not. Because if it isn't, if the camera's closed off, then it will still take the picture, but it will just basically say there's nothing there. So quite a few different uses for this. I'm not going to go through the describe from File Explorer or describe from Clipboard, because they basically do the same thing. If you've got an image, if you've done Control C on an image or copied a URL, as I said earlier, then you can use the clipboard option. It will grab that for you. There's no need to do Control V to paste. It will just pick up on whatever you've got there and describe it. Similar with the File Explorer as well. So it will just bring up the standard, as I said, Windows file view. You browse through your files and folders, select an image, and it will upload it and give you a description. So there you go. That is Be My Eyes, now available on either your Windows 10 or your Windows 11 computer.
Thank you to Callum Stoneman there, demonstrating Be My Eyes on Windows. Callum is back with us. So how did you find it in general, really using it on Windows, before my next question?
Yeah, it's good. You know, I like it. It's a nice little simple app. They've put nice little intuitive keyboard shortcuts in there, which you can run from anywhere as well, as long as the app is running. You don't have to have the Be My Eyes app in focus to do these shortcuts. So, I mean, you could just open it up and forget about it, really, and just try those shortcuts when you need them. So, yeah, it's nice. I'm definitely going to keep this on my system and use it if I need to.
Now, I'm glad to see that this is available on Windows, because, you know, most of us are Windows users in one capacity or another. But my observation, and feel free to email us if you've noticed anything different at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. There doesn't seem to be much of that sort of stuff available for the Mac.
Yeah, there isn't. There really isn't. We've just been talking about, obviously, we've just heard about Be My Eyes. I was talking at the start about Jaws releasing their version. But the Mac, yeah, I'm kind of struggling. And I'm surprised as well, actually, because I thought this sort of thing would have been either easier to do on the Mac, or it would have been something that comes to, you know, both platforms. I mean, I'm sure there's like web services that you can upload your image to. You could probably do it in the normal ChatGPT website, but the difference is getting the descriptions in a way that works for us, in a kind of blind specific way, I guess. So I'm not aware of anything. The closest thing I could think of is maybe the Type Ahead app. That could do it to some degree, but that's not really what it's designed for.
Yes, and I think it links back to what we said earlier in the show, where it's good to have as much choice as possible for every type of user. But yeah, at the moment, this sort of kind of, you know, Be My Eyes on Windows, there's not really an equivalent solution for the Mac, really, where it, you know, there are Mac users. Now, sure, there may not be as many blind or partially sighted Mac users, but there are plenty still. And it would be good to have equal choice available. So it'd be interesting to see if something becomes available for the Mac, whether it's an equivalent of Be My Eyes or whether it's their own version for the Mac. It's certainly an interesting one, I think, and it certainly misses out at the moment.
Yeah, it does feel like we're kind of missing a big portion of users, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I guess the reason they are targeting Windows first is because of that majority market, where you naturally have considerably more Windows users. So therefore, that platform's going to be probably prioritized a bit more, because people use Windows not only for personal use, but naturally in a lot of office jobs and such and various positions like that, Windows is quite outright the more use platform.
Yeah, well, this is, I guess, where you come in. We're not aware of anything, but that doesn't necessarily mean there isn't. And if you're a Mac user and if you found something, then get in touch, let us know. We'd love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that all important email address. We head back to Frankfurt now with our very own Dave Williams, who's got a bit of a roundup of the best technology to come out of the Sight City conference.
This is Dave Williams reporting from Sight City 2024. I'm with Ed Rogers from Bristol Braille Technology, and we're going to be reflecting on some of the highlights from the world's largest exhibition of accessible and inclusive technology designed for blind and partially sighted people. Before we get into that, though, let's just talk a little bit, Ed, about the way the event is designed, because this isn't an event that's kind of, you know, squirreled away in the back of somebody's building or, you know, the cheapest venue they can find. This is in the center of Frankfurt at the convention center, and the event is spread over is it five floors? You come in on the ground floor, and then above that, there are four more floors that are reached by, you know, escalators and stairs.
It feels grand, doesn't it?
It does feel grand, and when you go in and you're in that reception area, there are lots of ways that they try to make that welcome really accessible. You know, they've got tactile diagrams and maps of the layout of the building. That information's available in German. Obviously, we're in Frankfurt, but also in English as well. There are lots of guides available to help you find your way around the building, although I should say that the guides are in very high demand, so it was quite difficult to find somebody. And the other feature, which I really appreciated, actually, is that when you were walking around on each of the four floors where the exhibitors are, they've got this interesting kind of tactile strip that runs the length of each corridor. So as a blind person, you can kind of walk along with your cane, and your cane feels the tactile strip. And then there are little kind of spurs, I guess, that lead off from, you know, left to right, that take you to the exhibition tables. Was there anything, Ed, that really kind of struck you about the way Sight City is designed just as an event compared with other events that you've been to around the world?
Well, some of the events you might compare it to include the old Sight Cities. So some people would have been to the ones that were set in the airport, which were magnificent but so crowded and dense, weren't they? This is very airy, like you say. It's over four floors, plus a ground floor as well. And I think that the way to think about it is you've got these, it's almost, you just keep going up these escalators until you find the thing that you want to go to. And then you come out onto a corridor on a floor, and there's stands on the corridor that leap around onto the left and the right. And then in the middle, you've got a big room full of other, it's just very explorable. Now, on the flip side is, it's impossible to remember what floor you're on when you're there. And it's impossible to remember where anyone is on any particular floor, right? But you just explore the different places. The thing that stood out to me, Dave, was how frequently you bumped into people without it feeling like it's cramped, right? They've got cafes on, I think, two different floors for cafes. It's very relaxed. You can kind of make sure that you have whatever meeting you're going to have whenever you're going to have it, and you don't even need to really do much arranging. It's a really good show for that mix of meeting people from industry, people who are punters who are wanting to have a look at some tech, and people who are just sort of, you know, coming along with someone to see. It's a really interesting mix, isn't it?
You and I have been to lots of Sight Village events. Of course, we've been to CSUN in California. And of course, these events often have talks and meetings and, you know, kind of conference aspects alongside the exhibition, right? And we're not really covering that here. What I want to try and get across to our listeners is just the sheer number of companies. There's a lot of contrasts, isn't there? You know, we were just talking before we started recording about there's some really low cost options, some really high end options. Just share some of that.
Yeah, I mean, CSUN's great. I go to Sight Village every year. I go usually to the Birmingham one, and I go to London one. But if there is one event where you wanted to see the most different companies in one place, I think it is Sight City, actually, now. I don't know if it always was, but it certainly is now. I mean, low cost and high cost. Well, something that I was really impressed to see this year is a Turkish distributor called Beyid. I think that's Beyid. And they've actually started manufacturing their own braille frames and braille frames with styluses. And you can buy a four-line braille frame for €2. You can buy a 9-line braille frame for €3, and you can buy a 27-line braille frame for €5. And it's only another euro to get the stylus. That's amazing. Outside of bulk orders that you get from a company like the Worth Trust in India, you just don't see that sort of thing. And they're just selling it to people. And there aren't many shows where you actually get that affordable stuff that you can just put in your pocket with change that you've happened to have with you.
And they were selling stock.
I bought four.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that they were selling stock right there at the table. They also had tactile rulers and protractors. I think there was a chess set there. You and I started a little game as well.
Abacus.
Yeah, and an abacus as well. So fantastic. Well, there we are.
It was only about 5 moves.
There we are. But in contrast with that, you've also got the big industrial braille embossers and some of the more high-end equipment.
Yes, and if you like your braille kit, it is a thrill to be able to, on the one hand, go into one place and buy yourself the original braille device, which is a frame with a stylus and for you know, €3 included. And on the other hand, you can go see American Thermoform with their Braillo. I don't know how much that costs, but that's like the highest end you can get for your braille embossing. And then Malbec is there with their printing press. And we had quite a lot of fun looking at their zinc embossing device, didn't we?
Yeah, they had these sort of zinc plates that you know, you can press the paper onto.
And if you are a braille fan, there is nothing more fundamentally geeky than just enjoying seeing the zinc plates, which then, of course, then goes into the presses.
Away from braille, there was the usual sea of video magnifiers, as you know, one for every day of the month, it sometimes feels to me. And then a lot of reading devices as well, some of which are app-based, some of which are wearable cameras, some of which are standalone cameras that sit on a table. And, of course, a lot of people now talking about how their reading solution not only scans the document, but you can ask follow-up questions and use GPT or AI to interrogate that content. You know, what are the vegetarian options, all that stuff that we've talked about many times on podcasts over the last year. So they were really kind of strong themes as well, I think, that were running throughout the exhibition.
Yeah, you mean, and of course, people integrating things where you have a photo on a page that someone's printed of a braille. So Canon were demonstrating their ability to scan pages, so you get braille and then you listen to it back. My personal focus is so focused on braille and tactile graphics that sometimes I tend to miss some of these innovations coming elsewhere. So I kind of skipped over some of those, but you couldn't miss the big focus on AI this year, and the rest of the world as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and they've got lots of independent living devices, you know, things like talking scales.
It's a really good place, actually, for getting those little devices.
Yeah, blood pressure monitors, things like that. Let's talk about Page a little bit. We saw them a couple of times recently. So Page Braille have made a device that replaces the base of a Perkins Brailler with a circuit board that can detect which keys you're pressing, enabling sort of braille learning, basically. It's a kind of a bridge, I guess, almost like an analog to digital converter. So you can take your Perkins Brailler, but use that as an input device for online braille learning experiences.
And I believe they're rolling it out now, aren't they? I mean, they've already been rolling it out for a while. They had a stand at Sight City this year, and I know they've got big things that they're planning in the coming year. We shall see where we go with it. But Sight City is always an exciting place to be able to not only go to stands like Page and Orbit and all these other people who are producing new products, but actually chat to usually the men and women behind the products themselves. This is somewhere where the people who created these devices, who decided what they are, who sweated over them, are very frequently there, and you can just have a chat and sit down with them at that cafe on the fourth floor and try something out and learn why Page decided that it was important to build this PCB that you put on the bottom of a Perkins to you know, re-revolutionize a product from the 50s.
Navigation is also a big theme at a lot of these conferences at the moment. I appreciate it's not a Braille thing, but there are lots of technologies, whether that's optical codes that you can scan with your phone, or whether it's Bluetooth based, or you know, some other technology. So there's lots of companies very involved with how do you do indoor navigation, how do you get from A to B if you're at a shopping centre or a hospital or a big indoor space. All feels a bit Wild West to me at the moment. I'm not sure anyone's quite nailed it just yet, but certainly fascinating.
Yeah, you're right. It feels like in a decade there will be a lot of this will no longer be here, and we'll have something. The dust will have settled on something, right?
Yeah. So a lot of consolidation potentially in the future. The multi-line Braille display things continues apace. Lots of companies involved in developing refreshable tactile graphics tablets or multi-line Braille displays. Some of the usual suspects. So we've got the Monarch from Humanware, the Graffiti from Orbit. We've got the DotPad, of course, and your very own Knut, Ed, from Bristol Braille Technology.
Yeah. We actually came to this conference, Sight City, primarily to demonstrate our upgrade to the Knut console to customers who told us that they were going to be at this event. So what we've done is we've got our 9-line by 40-cell display, and we've been adding in an upgrade to it to turn it into the Knut console, which is where you can use it as a Linux workstation or a computer science workstation and can do video gaming and programming and all sorts of things like that. And it's a very powerful tool. And there are other products that are on the cusp of being released. So the Knut was released in 2019 and our new device was released last year, the Knut console. There are other products that are on the cusp of being released as well, such as the Monarch from APH, which is based off the DOT technology from DOT Incorporated from Korea. The Monarch is from Humanware and APH. And those are both proximally equidistant pins. So they're all about tactile graphics and raster graphics. And that's a very interesting, different approach. And then, of course, there's Orbit, who, as many people know, back in, I think it was 2017 or 18 or something like that, released the Graffiti, which wasn't exactly a Braille display, but it was multi-line tactile graphics. And they've got their own slates now, which are 5-line Braille displays and a 3-line one, I think.
There's also a little 3D printing about as well. I went to a college who were talking about how they support their blind students, you know, and one of the things they tried to do was to create a 3D image of the campus.
Yes, and I didn't actually get to see their 3D image of the campus, but I know that 3D printing certain things in in fact, I saw the outline of the building on the outside. And 3D printing is a technology which it's been around for a while, but I think often we have seen people tend to use it for slightly facile things, and it's only really started to come into its own in this field. And where 3D printing can really benefit, I think, our field, is that it works really well for short runs. So you can customize things, you can make stuff where you only need one or two or three or four of them, and you can do whatever you need for someone. I think an area which is as yet unexplored, maybe, or not unexplored, but underexplored, is semi-3D, of like two-dimensional images which have been embossed slightly more, a little like the way the Graffiti works. So you're 3D printing something which is... do you remember, Dave, that artist that used to produce the beautiful images from photography of smoke coming off a match and the moon landing? I think it was.
Yeah, Ben Luger. He's sort of stepped away from this.
He has, but 3D printing can really bring art to life as well as practical things.
Right, and we saw some of that at the World Unseen exhibition produced by Canon at Somerset House in London recently, widely reported on RNIB Connect Radio and in lots of other media as well. I was lucky enough to be there, and they really tried to develop an immersive experience with tactile imagery, braille, large prints, audio, and other elements as well. So back to Sight City, just before we wrap up, Ed, what have we missed anything? Is there anything that we've not talked about that kind of grabbed your attention this week?
Well, I think the thing that stuck out most to me is what a good place it is to meet people from all around the world. And not just because lots of people come from all around the world, but because the venue itself is a great place just to have chats, to bump into people. It doesn't feel stressful necessarily. It's airy, there's plenty of places to sit and talk. I don't know, it's a really... Maybe it's because we're in Europe, it feels more convenient, but it's certainly gaining in my mind as the central location that you go to if you want to talk to customers and distributors from anywhere in the world in our particular field.
Yeah, certainly a lot going on, lots and lots of products and services and organisations to interact with, and I really feel now it probably is the leading event now annually, where you're going to have that opportunity to, you know, meet people who are making, you know, one or two euro braille frames
or 50,000 pound embossers.
Exactly, you know, compare and contrast and whatever you're into, whether it's braille, magnification, navigation, mobility.
Whether you're coming to do a business deal or you're coming to meet a friend and you both happen to want to check out the, you know, the latest talking alarm clocks, you know. And yeah, we both met both sorts of people in the last day.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Ed. I really appreciate your time and your reflections on Sight City 2024. This is Dave Williams reporting from Frankfurt at Sight City.
Now on Tech Talk, it's time to talk a bit of sport. So with a great summer of sport coming up, including the Euros taking place in Germany, I want to have a look at a sports app and show you the app I use to keep up with scores and results, which I've been using for a few years now. For a while, a few years ago, I was looking for an app that can give me sports results, scores and live fixtures and all that. And I was trying to find an app which is very much simple and doesn't give you too much information and makes it easy for you to browse through it. And I have found one a few years ago called FlashScore. What I like about it is it's simple. It does exactly what I've asked for. It's simple. It provides me the information I want in a very easy way to get it without having too much stuff to swipe through as a voiceover user. The first thing you get on the app is
football button.
The football button. So this button actually shows you the sport you are currently focused on. So we are currently focused on football. And if I double tap that, it will actually allow me to select a different sport. Now, what is important to know about FlashScore is it supports plenty of sports. You know, football is only one of them. Some other ones include tennis, rugby union, rugby league, cricket, basketball, golf, and many others. There's too much to mention. American football, darts, and like I said, many others that you can look through and pick the sports you want. In settings, you can also change which sport the app focuses on when it first opens. I've got it set to football because that's the sport probably I'm most interested in. So on each sports screen, there is a few things that you will always get. First one will be 14 buttons that represent days of the week, going 7 days backwards and 7 days forwards. The first section you will get following all the buttons is
favorite competitions heading.
So you'll have favorite competitions. So first it will show you a list of competitions that either you or FlashScore has marked as favorite. Now, FlashScore will recommend you competitions that should be your favorite, but that's purely based on popularity. You can actually change that if you so wish. I have selected my favorite competitions and some I've deleted, so I've customized that. Before that, if you swipe to the left from favorite competitions,
all games 40 216,
what that means is there are 40 games that are live with 216 games in total today. And if I was to tap on that heading, the favorite competitions heading will disappear and it will show me all games that are going on today, no matter the competition, which I think is a bit too much. So it's good to have that separated.
Europe, Euro U17, 1, 2. France, League 1, 1.
So I'm in the list of my favourite competitions. Once I flick through them, I can see all competitions in the sport I've selected. So we'll go to France League One for me to show you something.
France League One. France League One. One. Today 30.05.
So we're looking at the 30th of May as of this recording. Now on this screen you will have a few things, but the most important is where the list of games is.
Button calendar. Button. League One. Relegation. Playoffs. Heading.
So I'll swipe to the right.
France. Heading. St. Etienne. Metz. 19. 30.
So this is where you are in the list of games. Now, there's only one game going on today. Now, the format is very similar for all of these. So you've got Saint Etienne versus Metz. Now, if I swipe to the right.
Toggle my games button.
Now, you have this toggle my games button, which is crucial because that's the button you can double tap on. And that way you will receive live notifications for goals scored in this game and the result and things like that. And it will also appear in your favourites tab. And that's how easy it is to mark games that you want to follow. Now, that is one way to do it, where you can go through loads of competitions and tap on individual games to add them to favourites to follow each day. But as you can imagine, that's quite a bit of a task that's a bit unnecessary to do. So that is where the favourites come in. So along the bottom of the screen, you've got a few tabs.
Selected. All games. Tab. 1 of 5.
You've got all games, which is where we have been currently.
Live. Tab. 2 of 5.
You've got the live tab, where you can see what games are going on live, self-explanatory.
Favorites, tab, 3 of 5.
You've got the favorites tab, which is crucial.
News, tab, 4 of 5.
News, self-explanatory.
Standings, tab, 5 of 5.
And standings is where you can see the league tables, world rankings for different sports, things like that. So favorites is where we go to next. In Flash Score, you can actually select your favorite teams and or your favorite individual players for a specific sport if there are no teams featured in that particular sport. And once you have selected these favorites, their games will always show up in your favorites tab, which I think is the best way of doing it because it's the most time efficient way. That way, once you select all these teams and players, you won't need to worry about going through every day's events and selecting the games you want to follow. Sometimes there might be individual games you want to follow that aren't always in your favorites, but you can then select them manually if you wish.
Games. News. All games. Live. Button favorites edit order. Yesterday 29.05, show. Today 30.05, 5.
So it says 30.05 followed by the number 5. So it's basically the date, which is 30th as of this recording. And there are 5 games going on today that involve my favourite team or player. What I can do now is go through the list of events. And it will look like it did in the previous screen, where it will have a toggle my games button next to each match. So I can always turn these games off if I actually don't want to follow them. And if I turn the individual events off, the players or teams will still be in my favorites. I will show you how to add a favorite team purely because it's not the most accessible. So there's 2 ways of doing it. One is you can search for your favorite team, tap on them from the search results and find the favorite button. Or another is go to the standings of the relevant competition, tap on the team you want, open their screen, and tap the favourites button. So I'm going to show you that one.
Standings. Flash Score.
So we're in the standings. This is currently showing me my favourite competitions first. So let's find England's Premier League.
Asia. Asia. Australia. 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 Austria. Belgium. Brazil. Canada. Denmark. England. Premier League.
England Premier League. Double tap.
England. England.
So it's currently brought up the Premier League table, and I'm going to tap on...
1, Man City, 38.
So I tapped in the middle of the screen where the table is. I found Man City. I'm going to double tap.
1, England, button, possibly, back.
So some of these buttons are unlabeled, but thankfully voiceover recognition does recognise some labels. So as you've heard, this first button, it was said button, possibly, back.
Football, button.
Then again, there's the football switch, which is switches sports.
Button, possibly, share.
There's a share button.
Button, possibly, star.
And there's a button which says possibly star. Now, this voiceover recognition is very important in this app because it is this unlabeled button that you need to tap in order to add or remove a team from favourites. And more often than not, it will say button, possibly, star. You can also search for your team, like I said, which is an option in the All Games tab. There is a search field that you can tap on and tap in the team you want. But I always like to do it from the standings, really. But it's up to you. It's an individual preference. One more little aspect I'd like to mention with Flash Score is also commentaries. So on selected football matches, Flash Score will actually do football commentary for you. Now, the reason I say selected, it only does certain competitions and certain matches. But once the game starts, if you tap on the game, it will open the match screen. Now, on that match screen, you can read through text commentary of the game, and you can either separate it via important moments or all moments. So you can kind of pick the highlights or check through everything. But some games will have a start audio commentary button, and you can listen to the commentary that Flash Score themselves provide, which can be useful if you can't find a game that you want to listen to on the radio anywhere in your country or on telly. Flash Score might provide you the alternative commentary. But like I said, it's a very simple app. One or two unlabeled buttons, but voiceover recognition thankfully helps you to recognize them. All in all, it's a simple Live Scores app that does what you want it to do without any additional content that you don't want to browse. There are advertisements, but they are thankfully near the bottom of the content, so you won't encounter them until you get to the bottom of what you are actually looking to get. So that's a brief walkthrough, the Flash Score app. Now, if you have any more specific questions to the app or would like a more specific demo on a particular function or section of the app, drop us an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That was a brief walkthrough, the Flash Score app. Enjoy the summer of sport, everyone.
And that's just about all we've got time for this week. Thanks for joining us. If you've liked the show, if you like what you've heard, then please do spread the word. And as always, if you've got any thoughts, comments, questions, maybe you're aware of some sort of image description service for the Mac, we'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is how you can get in touch with us. You can send us an email or you can attach a voice message as well, and we will get your voice on air. But for now, from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavelkovich, and the rest of the team, bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.